Hello and welcome to the third episode of the Brits and Pieces podcast. Hooray! We made it another 2 weeks. my name is Duncan Price. I'm the owner slash editor of britsandpiecesmma.co.uk. We're here once again. We're going to be covering a few things today. UFC 173 coming up tonight. We're going to be having a little bit of a chat about the main card there. Some good fights on there to go through. Obviously, discussing some of the week's hot topics and questions towards the end. So we may as well get right into it. I'll welcome our two guest hosts, I suppose is the right thing to say. That would be Mr. Paul Anderson. Say hello, Paul. Mr. Fraser Ryan is joining us.
How are we doing?
From the from up north. Very far up north.
Well, cold, rainy Scotland.
Yeah, not the furthest you can go, but you know, not far off.
I'm not going any further.
Compared to me on the south coast, it's pretty far away. So we're truly multicultural here. We are going all across the British Isles. You see, it's been pointed out to me we don't have a Welsh correspondent, but we are working on that as we speak. Not really, but you know. We'll try. One day, maybe, if we can persuade someone else to join us, we'll get it done.
It's the only qualification you need.
Exactly. You just need to be Welsh. You don't even need to know about MMA, really. You know, just be Welsh. You know, just be who you are. So we'll get right into it. We'll start with UFC 173. What we'll do is I'll go through the fights, you know, who's fighting. I'll go through who we've picked in our pick zone feature, and obviously then we'll discuss you know, why we've decided on those things. So the main event, highly anticipated if you believe Dana White, is Henan Burrell versus TJ Dillashaw for the UFC bantamweight title. And now looking at the picks here, Paul has gone for Burrell via TKO in round 2. Fraser has gone for Burrell via TKO in round 1, and I've gone for Burrell via KO in round 2. So, Paul, do you want to start us off? Why are you thinking the TKO there?
Yeah, pretty much. I think Burrell's on a completely different level than Dillashaw. I watched a couple more of Dillashaw's fights on Fight Pass, and he has this terrible tendency to drop his hands. So, unless he's, you know, sorted that out, Burrell's going to find a home for the hands and just pick apart at him. I think it'll probably go to the second because Dillashaw has shown some resilience to taking a shot in the face every now and then, but that's not going to last that long, I don't think so.
Yeah, yeah. And Fraser, you think TKO as well, but you think a little bit earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I think Burrell's just he's on a different planet compared to everyone else that Dillashaw's fought. Dillashaw's too aggressive, and Burrell's too smart for him. He'll stuff the takedowns and catch him quite early, I think.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I don't know why, I just feel a full-out KO. I agree with you, Paul. I think he does tend to drop his hands low, Dillashaw, and I think Burrell can hit him hard enough to actually knock him out, but I do think he might just be able to tough out the first round, just, you know, sticking and moving and, you know, escaping, really, you know, from the onslaught. So, but yeah, I think, you know, we all pretty much agree that it's going to be an absolute destruction, but you know, it sort of raises a different point whether it's kind of a fair fight, really. You know, have they sort of you know, Fraser, do you think they've kind of thrown Dillashaw to the lions? Or
I think it's a case of there's no one else to fight him. There's no one else to fight Burrell at the moment. I mean, Dillashaw, I think it might just be a case of timing as opposed to anything else, with Cruz being out again.
Yeah, absolutely. I did hear I think it was a rumour, I don't know whether it was started, but I'm going to do a pull here and forget the guy's name. Is it Oliveira? Was it Oliveira? No. Who was the guy Dillashaw lost to by a split decision? I'm trying to think of his name now. That's awful.
Rafael Assuncao.
Assuncao, that's it. Well done. He comes up with a name just in time to save my face. I did hear a rumour that Assuncao would have been in that slot, but he was injured, I think, after that fight. And he told the UFC that he wouldn't be available to fight until probably at least 175, if not later. So because of the fact that fight was such a close... close decision, I think they've obviously decided to go with Dillashaw based on the fact it would have been Assuncao and he couldn't compete in time. But whether that would have made it any more of a fight or any more even is a bit debatable. But Paul, do you think if it had been Assuncao it might be a different result? Or
I still think Brow takes on everyone in that division, but it's, as Fraser rightly said, it's just a case of they don't really have anyone to step up, and this is a pay-per-view event. They need to have a champion to headline it now because they've got so many events on. It's, unless there's a belt on the line, less people are going to say, yeah, I think I'll throw down the $60 for that. There has to be a reason to sell it, and the belt's the hook for it. So originally it was meant to be Chris Weidman and Lyoto Machida, but that's been pushed back to 175. So
yeah, thank goodness.
Where I was ready, here, someone fight him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, I think we all think that's going to be a crush. We'll talk a little bit later a bit more about Hen and Burrell. So we'll carry on to our next fight, which is Daniel Cormier against Dan Henderson. That'll be the co-main event. Paul, you've gone for Cormier via TKO in round two. And Fraser, you've gone for Cormier via decision. Fraser, why do you think it's going to go as far as a decision?
I mean, the only time I've ever seen Dan Hendel get knocked out is against Vitor Belfort. Cormier's not really shown me anything that he's got the power or the ability to knock out Hendel. We saw him knock out Pat Cummins, but Pat Cummins is a coffee barista, not exactly a high level MMA fighter. But yeah, I mean, unless Hendo can, land the famed H-bomb, Cormier will likely just smother him on top for three rounds.
Yeah. Paul, you think Cormier can get the finish, though?
Yeah, I mean, he does have heavy hands. He's shown that a lot throughout his career, and Dan Henderson he's just looking very, very flat-footed. I mean, you can look at his last fight. Yes, he won it via, the old H-bomb came out, but for those two rounds, Shogun was just picking him apart and dropped him lots. It's, I think, the old chin starting to turn from granite to glass now, and I think Cormier will be able to capitalise on that.
He'll be able to do what Shogun couldn't and actually finish him off, yeah. I've actually gone for Cormier via decision as well. I agree with you both. I don't know, I've just got a feeling, because it's a three-round fight, I've just got a feeling Hendo can make it till the end. Don't get me wrong, I don't think it's necessarily going to be close. I just, I don't know, I just think if it was a five-round fight, I'd go for Cormier, and I'd probably even go for Cormier within three rounds, to be honest with you. I think with Hendo knowing that he's only got to go for 15 minutes, he might just have enough to kind of hold on somehow. As he has done before, but at some point somebody is going to start finishing him off, aren't they? So it could well be this time. Make no bones about it. If anyone's going to do it, it's going to be a light heavyweight probably, and a big one at that. He's going to have the power to put him away. So I think it's an intriguing one, though, don't you think? I mean, like you say, the H-bomb, that's kind of the unknown factor, isn't it? With whether Cormier can take it and keep coming, or take it once or twice and keep coming. That's kind of the unknown that makes it an interesting fight. Because I think if you look at them on paper, you're going to probably go for Cormier every time. That right hand's put out many a challenger in the past. So, yeah, cool.
It's quite sad in a way that that's the only real point of interest in the fight, really. It's just given someone who's a legend of the sport literally nothing more than a puncher's chance, and that's pretty much what it's boiled down to at this stage.
Exactly.
His last fights, though, Hendo's looked so rigid and stiff. It looks he's actually struggling to move around the place, especially when you're up against someone like Daniel Cormier. Could be a long night for him.
Yeah, Cormier's record, you know, he's unbeaten. He's had 14 fights. Dan Henderson, he's got a lot more mileage on the clock than that, so.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
His career's taken its toll on him in over 40 professional bouts.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, you only have to go back a few years and he got dominated by Jake Shields, didn't he? So, it's a quick turnaround, isn't it, for some fighters? You know, where they take a loss and come back and, you know, he only has to beat one or two, you know, legends or, you know, fighters who are above him, and they're back talking about a title shot, aren't they? So, you know, he's managed to get himself back up there in the title picture, but, you know, whether that's a good thing for the UFC going forward is a debatable. Like you say, it kind of turns it into not a mockery, because you're not saying that he can't win and that he's not without skill, but, you know, we are literally saying he's probably going to be bested in every single area. So, you know, they're not necessarily the fights that attract you to a card, are they? You know, the ones where you think, well, that's a bit of a squash, unless the other guy just lands a wild haymaker, you know. But yeah, I mean, I think we've all picked Cormier, I think quite rightly. I don't think any of us would be massively surprised if suddenly, you know, big shot and Cormier goes down. I think arguably his chin hasn't been massively tested from what I can recall. But he's certainly never been, you know, knocked out or you know, TKO'd or anything. So obviously he must have taken some, you know, damage as he's gone along. It's interesting, but, you know, like we say, not necessarily, you know, a fight we're all clamouring to see. So we will go on to the third fight on the main card. So this will be the fight below the co-main event, which is Jake Ellenberger and Robbie Lawler. And here we go with the picks. Paul, you've gone for Lawler via decision. Fraser's gone for Lawler via round one TKO. And I've gone for Ellenberger via decision. So, Paul, you want to explain why you think Lawler's going to take that one?
The complete resurgence in that man's career. His takedown defense and that has been exceptional against Johnny Hendricks. That was such a close fight that many people thought was just going to be a complete and utter destruction of Lawler. Apart from me, actually, who actually picked him, but unfortunately was wrong. I did say it would be closer, and it was. I think he's maybe finding it more difficult to finish Jake Ellenberger. He's quite sort of tough to finish and all that as well, and I think he could spend a lot of time sort of sprawling and just sprawl and brawl type fight. But I think he'll just accumulate the damage.
Yeah, so you think he'll be able to last out the three frames. Fraser, you think Lawler is going to get it done quite quickly?
Yeah, I've got a feeling that we're going to be in for one of the rounds of the year as well. I think two of them are going to come out swinging at each other. And I've got a feeling that Robbie's going to land that big shot that's going to put Jake down. So if you remember, I mean, Jake's not been finished a lot, but it always makes me think of the Martin Kampmann fight when he got knocked out by Kampmann after you know, doing so well against him. It always sticks in my mind whenever Ellenberger fights.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, he did have that loss, and that kind of forever. If you watch that live, and even if you watch it, you know, on a replay or something, it kind of sticks in your mind when you're thinking about someone's chin, don't you? You think back to that moment, and you think, can he take another one of those shots, or if he takes one of those shots this time, is he going to keep coming? So, I think that's a good point. I've gone for Ellenberger mainly because, I don't know, Lawler doesn't always seem to do that well against good wrestlers. Having said that, I mean, Ellenberger's maybe not the best wrestler in the division, but I think he'd be wise not to stand and trade with Lawler. But it's always the temptation, isn't it? I think, you know, if the other guy's throwing bombs, you tend to, you know, just get embroiled in throwing bombs back. And I think if that's the case, then, Lawler's definitely got the edge, but I don't know. I think I'm just hoping that Ellenberger's got a better game plan than let's just go out and slug it out with a slugger, you know. But I don't know. That's another one where I've kind of picked against the grain. You know, my instinct is almost saying pick Lawler. You know, it starts on the feet. It'd probably get into a brawl, and you know, he's the better striker. But I'm just hoping that Ellenberger, because you know, Ellenberg has been on the fringes of sort of 4 or 5 in the division, I think, for quite a long time. I think if he's ever going to get up there, he needs to change his game plan and start, you know, coming into these fights maybe a bit more prepared for each individual fighter rather than just going with what he does, you know. So I think that's my main reason for going for Ellenberger. But yeah, I mean, I actually think that's probably the most intriguing fight on the card. I don't know whether you guys agree with that.
Yeah, it's arguably a number one contender fight.
Yeah, definitely. That's certainly one that I'm most interested in.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I mean, I think as I say, that's the one we're all looking forward to see what's going to happen. And you know, it's an intriguing one, certainly. Paul, you said that Lawler's the betting favourite at the moment. Is that right?
He is. Yep.
Yeah.
I can't remember the lines or whatever at the moment, but he certainly is. And I think after his performance against Johnny Hendricks, where no one gave him a chance, he's deservedly so.
Yeah.
Especially now in a 3-round fight.
Absolutely. I mean, it was a fairly close fight, certainly. I think it was probably, was it the last round or the last round or two that kind of took it away from him a little bit?
It was pretty much even going into the last one, and Hendricks came back, got the takedown, and started throwing punches.
And that was enough to get it done.
Yeah, so.
So there are two other fights on the main card. I won't go through the picks or anything, because obviously you guys can check them out on the website. But we do also have Francisco Rivera. He is fighting. Lost it. Here we go. He is fighting Takeya Mizugaki, and James Krause is fighting Jamie Varner. That'll open up the main card. I believe there are 7 other fights on the prelims, so we've all chosen our winners and losers on that. So as I say, if you want to check those out, then go to the website www.britsandpiecesmma.co.uk, and see who we've gone for. Okay, so we'll move on into the next part of the show, which will be our sort of hot topics, which is where we discuss, you know, the sort of things that have happened this week in the world of MMA. So the first thing we're going to talk about is Cage Warriors have signed a deal with Channel 4. I know a lot of people, when they saw the headline, thought, oh great, live MMA on terrestrial TV in the UK. I know that's it sort of conjures up the headline, makes you think. When you read down, it's not quite as good as that. Channel 4 are actually going to show an hour-long midweek highlight show following every Cage Warriors event. So obviously they're yet to announce how that's going to fit into their schedule. My instinct is it's going to be on at something silly o'clock at night, like 1 a.m. or something. But hey-ho, you know, MMA on terrestrial TV in the UK can only be a good thing. Fraser, what did you think about this story?
Well, obviously it's a great thing for the sport, but when I heard it was the highlight show, my first instinct was, how are they going to fit all of this into 1 hour? Because, I mean, if you ever watch Cage Warriors, 90% of the time it's an absolutely fantastic show. Personally, I think there's no better promotion that they could put on TV British or European promotion, sorry, they could put on terrestrial TV, take the sport forward, seeing as what all the gains that Cage Warriors have made over the last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're 100% correct. I don't think there's another promotion in Europe, really, who are as professional, you know, as well produced. Obviously, they're not on the scale of like the UFC or anything like that. But you know, the other promotions in the UK certainly have a bit of a reputation for letting things down. You know, production quality not being that great. You know, won't name names or anything, but. You know, I 100% agree with that. I think Cage Warriors would be the best one to go forward with. And, I think an hour is tough. Are they going to just show the best fight and then, you know, the rest of it is going to be highlights? Are they going to try and squeeze 2 fights on there? Yeah, it's kind of an arbitrary time slot, really. I mean, that's going to be 45 minutes, presumably, once you take the, you know, commercials out of it. So, yeah, it doesn't give you a lot of time to sort of get into the actual event, really. But you know, Paul, is it better than nothing?
Well, that certainly is a step in the right direction. I mean, previously we've had a Channel 5 show some, you know, MMA and or some, you know, UFC and that from, you know, highlights from months ago, you know, whenever it's, you know, pretty not really irrelevant, but you kind of know what I mean. It's,
yeah,
you know, it's not as current. Having it the week after on Channel 4, it's a channel with more, you know, more high profile, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
As well, but in terms of the highlights, I mean, is it, are we just going to have, now we join the action in round 3 just before someone gets knocked out or submitted? You know, just show like a few minutes of that, or...
Yeah, because actually that could give, if you're just getting into the sport, you know, newly into the sport, it could almost give you a bit of a false impression that, you know, every round is exciting, you know, every fight is a knockout, you know, because if all you're seeing is exciting rounds and knockouts, you're going to think, oh, this is incredible, you know, this is high octane, which it is, you know, but then if you went to a live event and there was a couple of, you know, sort of snore draws, you might think, oh, I've been a bit conned here. You know, do you think, Fraser, do you think they can kind of get the sport over in 45 minutes, you know, how it works, and, you know?
The biggest issue, I think, with people in this country anyway, is seeing things like the ground game and that kind of thing. I don't think that, I can't see Channel 4 giving much airtime to, you know, like heavy wrestling and heavy jiu-jitsu fights, and they'll kind of focus more on your kind of stand-up stuff. But I mean, hopefully, if this highlight show proves popular, they will start showing them live on Saturday nights. But you never know. I mean, with Channel 4, I mean, I'm pretty sure they'd rather put, what is it, Big Fat Gypsy Wedding or something on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think Cage Warriors have still got a deal in place. I don't know when it ends with Premier Sports for the live shows, and obviously they show some live content, I think, on MMA Junkie and maybe a couple of other. I think they do it on their own website as well. But yeah, I guess it would be if it gets high ratings. I guess it would be a question for you know, the terrestrial sort of programmers, or, you know, Channel 4, if they want to keep doing it, whether they would be interested in showing you know, full events. I guess the only thing with that is, like you say, you know, TV time is so precious, especially sort of prime time TV time. I can't ever really see MMA getting enough viewers. Even if it does well on Channel 4, I still think all they would do is maybe they would show the whole event, but they'd show it at like 2 in the morning till 5 in the morning, or, you know, when everyone would have to record it probably. Paul, do you ever see a day where MMA might be on prime time terrestrial British TV?
We can all but dream. whenever, you know, the national broadcaster, the BBC, doesn't even cover it on their sports page, it kind of shows, you know, whilst the sport has came on leaps and bounds, it still isn't there yet, certainly in the UK. And again, the problem is, you know, every man who watches a, you know, or every person, I should say, that's not me sexist about it, you know, they probably think they can throw a punch. But whenever you see somebody on the ground, it's like, if you're unfamiliar with it, it's like, what the hell is this? Mm. You know, and it's like, people just don't appreciate, you know, the skill that goes into you working for a position, you know, before, you know, applying a joint lock or a choke.
I think it's because
it's a hard mindset to get into. Yeah, boxing. It's been part of our culture and that for years, and it's, you know, that's the acceptable thing. You know, this is, it's quite jarring for anyone new to see, you know, people, you know, in shorts grapple on the ground, yeah, you know, for the first time.
You get the usual sort of taunts, don't you? What are them two naked men doing? And, you know, exactly. It's not nice, but, you know, I think, like you say, boxing's been in our culture so long. Even someone who doesn't like sport, you know, male or female, but even someone who knows nothing about sport would know roughly what boxing is, roughly what the aim of it is, you know. Whereas MMA is not in people's consciousness really, unless you've come across it. You know, maybe you do or you don't like it, but a lot of people still haven't really heard of it. It's not in their sort of collective consciousness, is it, of you know, of everyone. Whereas, you know, something like boxing, when they're on their feet and someone gets KO, you know that's kind of the end of the fight. Or, you know, certainly in boxing, obviously you get your counts and stuff, but you know, you kind of know what the end game is. Whereas when they're on the ground, if you're not familiar with you know, that kind of sport, you know, MMA or any kind of sort of grappling, you're probably thinking, what are they actually trying to do? What's the, you know, how do they finish it from here? You know, how do they get the win? You know, and that's even if you can be bothered to carry on watching it, you know, after you flick through the channels. So Yeah, BBC wise, I do think that's a bit of a disgrace, because really they're paid for by the license fee. So really, I think it's out of order that they can actually pick and choose what sport they cover. As far as I'm concerned, they should cover every sport. Okay, maybe to a lesser or greater extent, but to say, oh well, no, you know, we just won't cover that, but we'll cover wakeboarding or, you know, something like that. And you think, well, that's just as legitimate a sport. I don't care if they want to, you know, cover, you know, wakeboarding or handball or whatever. That's fine. Totally, 100% is sport. They should cover it. But to say, well, we cover a bit of netball, but we don't cover the UFC. I'd like to hear someone from the BBC actually come out and say why they don't cover the UFC. That would really interest me, you know, to hear their explanation of who is deciding. Yeah. There's this up-and-coming sport, thousands of people attend it, yet we don't mention it, you know. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
The thing is, they actually cover wrestling as well, and I don't mean WWE wrestling. No. I just fired up their website here now. There's a Robertson Twins in Scotland team. Whoever they are doing, you know, a local wrestling thing, which isn't, you know, a synonymous thing with this country. I mean, you just look at the British fighters, wrestling is one of their weaknesses. But the fact that they cover that and not MMA is disappointing.
Yeah.
Would be a nice euphemism, I guess.
I think it might be nearly time to start doing some sort of campaign. Maybe get ourselves a job in the meantime. Hello BBC, you know, you should start covering MMA. And guess what? You've got three experts willing to do it for just a small amount of pay. You know,
minimum wage.
Yeah.
Or marginally more than I make at the moment.
To be honest with you, I probably would cover it for minimum wage. I mean, you know, if you're doing something you really enjoy, you don't really mind so much the, you know. I'm just trying to see if I can find out. I actually wrote...
I like nice things.
Yeah, that's true. Ah, here we go. Oh, no, hang on, that's a different one. I'm just going to see if I did write an article a little while ago about them not covering it on BBC. And actually, I kind of threw Sky in there, because they have like a UFC, I think, on their section on their website. But when I looked at it for this article I was writing, they hadn't updated it. We were on something like, I don't know, UFC 160 or something. They hadn't updated it since like UFC 115 or something ridiculous. Like, you know, we're talking about 2-3 years. They hadn't updated it. They had one or two pieces, but say like the video content. They had like press conferences, the odd one here and there, but they hadn't updated it for like 3 years. And you just think, well, you know, I guess they were sort of big on it when they had, because they had a series of Tough, didn't they?
Yeah.
I think they must have gone a bit, you know, overboard on it then, and then obviously lost Tough, no deal with the UFC for whatever reason, whether it was them or the UFC, and then just decided, well, I don't really need to update that bit because it's nothing to do with us anyway. But
just take the web page down.
Yeah, exactly. Just if you're not covering it, then maybe just take it out. But the thing is, I don't have as much of an issue with Sky, because Sky are paid for by the subscribers, so that, you know, that's, they kind of run their own ship. Whereas the BBC should be accountable to everyone, because everyone who's paying their TV license, which is, you know, the majority of people, you know, and obviously the government, you know, they shouldn't be able to say, oh, we do this and we do that. They should be impartial. They should cover all sport, no matter, you know. I mean, I'm not saying start doing WWE, because that's not technically a sport, although it's called sports entertainment, and it, you know, they obviously do take, you know, lumps and bumps and stuff. That's fine. They do what they do, but it's predetermined. So to me, that's not a sport per se. But you know, how come they can cover all these, you know, sports that, I mean, how many people are going to watch, with all the greatest respect, these two brothers up in Scotland doing their wrestling? You know, not many. Yet when
they're family.
Well, they're family. You know, they may have a large family. Large families up there, Fraser. Is that a big thing?
You know, going back to this wrestling point, I spoke to a Commonwealth Games hopeful during one of those. During one of his training sessions at Napier University.
Oh, cool.
And his training camp was sound, like the room that they were in was a big hall, and the wrestling training camp was sandwiched in between a kid's trampoline session and a women's spin class.
Mm.
That's the kind of level of professionalism that's in wrestling in this country. Whereas if you go to a mixed martial arts gym or any kind of gym that promotes fighting or jiu-jitsu or whatever, they're all really professionally run. They're all the guys who are there. They're all at the top of their game, kind of thing. It's shocking that the sport's not covered the way it should be.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, like you say, there's a lot of MMA gyms popping up sort of around the country, and they're training, full time MMA and obviously all the sort of components of. And like you say, that's at a higher level than, like you say, wrestling. With the greatest of respect, actually, wrestling could probably teach MMA a lot of stuff in this country. But you can't sort of say, oh, we're going to cover the lowliest sport because that's what we do. We're the BBC, we cover everybody, and then not cover a sport that's probably got, I would possibly say, hundreds of thousands of fans in the UK, maybe over, certainly 100,000, I wouldn't hesitate to say, they must get to watch a lot of UFC, or certainly a lot of people would record it, because there's 18,000 people turning up to an event in London, and obviously, not everyone can get to London. Not everyone, lives nearby. So if you're, over there in Northern Ireland or up in Scotland and you're a fan, I reckon there's a pretty big fan base there. We're not talking about football or anything like that, but, that's one of my sort of bugbears is that the BBC don't cover that. And maybe it might be time to start a little campaign or something there. I don't know. Cage Warriors on Channel 4, I think we all agree, a good thing, hopefully a sort of catalyst to something else, but, we'll just have to wait and see on that one, I think. So our next one, we'll just have a little chat about the Bellator pay-per-view. I think we've seen sort of bits and pieces. Paul, I think you've seen the majority of it, if not all of it. So, Paul, what were your thoughts on Bellator's pay-per-view effort on the weekend?
Well, I wouldn't say I've seen the majority of it, because the majority of it was trying to sell me the product that presumably I had already bought. we got it on Viva TV, which is like a free music channel that's owned by Viacom that we get, so we actually didn't have to pay a pay-per-view price for it. But apart from that, and like all the other major sites and that have said, pacing was such a huge problem for it, and yeah, it was. I mean, there was three fights ended in the first round, and then the main and co-main all went the distance of 25 minutes and 15 respectively. So this was like a 3-hour broadcast. There was a lot of filler in it, but overall, I mean, the fights and that were very, very good.
Yeah.
Well, apart from the main event, which just was all right. Rampage and King Mo.
Did you happen to agree with the decisions? I know there was a bit of controversy. Well, I say controversy. I don't know whether it was... obviously, the losers probably called it controversy, but I think the main event and, was it the co-main, were pretty close?
Yeah, they were pretty close. I honestly no strong feelings either way with the Jackson and Lawal fight, but Brooks and Chandler, I would have given it to Brooks. Michael Chandler just didn't look like he was on his usual form that night, and had he had a trilogy with Eddie Alvarez, I think Alvarez would have just walked through him. He just didn't look on his usual form. But
so you think it was more to do with his form and less to do with the opponent change? You don't think the opponent changed?
Well, at the end of the day, an opponent changes, you should be able to... you're a professional, you've got your own style and all that, and should be able to adapt to most scenarios.
Yeah. Very true. But that's, true.
Again, I've never set foot in the cage, so I don't know how much, could be more of a mental thing.
Yeah, quite possibly. Yeah, I'd be inclined to agree with you. I don't know whether, I guess Brooks is kind of considered to be not as good as Alvarez. So, although obviously that may be a fight they're looking to set up possibly. But yeah, I think a lot of people were quite shocked by that decision. But fair play to Brooks. He took his opportunity. That's what you got to do in this sport, isn't it? You get bumped up to a big fight, and you do, even if you lose and do well, you're going to get a bit of a push. So one of the big pieces of news, I think, was we say big pieces of news, but I think a lot of us suspected it might happen, was Tito Ortiz beat Alexander Shlemenko. Is that how you say it? Shlemenko.
Shlemenko, yes. Shlemenko. Tito Ortiz has beat up a middleweight.
Yeah, exactly. So, but he was definitely, Shlemenko was the favourite going in.
He was, yeah. I wish I knew, known that, or I would have put a bet on Ortiz.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't actually seen that fight. So was there presumably there was quite a big physical difference between the two when they actually squared off.
Yeah, it was like me fighting Cain Velasquez. That was a pretty huge difference. And whenever Ortiz got the takedown, Shlemenko just looked like a deer in the headlamps, like, what the hell do I do? And then arm triangle finish.
So. Fraser, do you think it was an element of Shlemenko not having had much competition in Bellator, or do you think it was just purely a size thing?
Personally, I think it was just a size thing. I mean, if you look at Shlemenko's record, he's had about 50 or 60 fights. You know, the guy's not exactly new to the sport. But yeah, I mean, as Paul says, I mean, Tito's head is bigger than Shlemenko. You know, the size disparity is just ridiculous. I mean, because if you look at Shlemenko, he should actually be fighting at welterweight. He shouldn't be fighting at middleweight. The only reason he's still at middleweight is because the Bellator middleweight division is terrible.
Yeah.
You know?
So he's been able to sort of get up there by the lack of depth of that division.
Yeah. I mean, if he was to move into the UFC at middleweight, he would get found out extremely quickly.
Yeah. It may happen in the future. They're probably cast a sideways glance over to Bellator now and again, don't they, UFC, when their deals come up? So it could happen. Yeah, absolutely. And now we'll have a little bit of a chat about something we spoke very briefly on about earlier, which is Dana White kind of bigging Henan Barão up to be the pound-for-pound best fighter in the world. I think he was citing some statistics that he had the most landed punches per minute, something like that. He was reading it off a card, which I am not, so excuse me if that's not quite the right quite the right stat. But Paul, do you think he's pound for pound best in the world, Henan Barão? Do you believe Dana White?
Well, whenever Dana White says that he's unbeaten in his last 35 fights and his record is 32-1-1, that's how good Henan Barão is. He's been unbeaten more than fights he's had.
he was unbeaten before he even started. Technically, I'm unbeaten.
Until he started. Yeah, me too.
Exactly.
I have never been beaten in an MMA bout.
We're all unbeaten then.
Yeah, exactly. I think I could take Henan Barão if he'd never fought before. We'd both be undefeated. But Fraser, who would you put above him if you were?
You've got to go with Jones and Aldo above him. I mean, the two of them are they've proven their legacy already. I mean, you've got Jones who just destroyed that light heavyweight division in about 18 months, and you've got Aldo as well, who even before the UFC was destroying guys with double knee knockouts in the WEC. But I was just not. He's just not kind of. He's not had that legacy win yet. I mean, I know he's beat Faber twice, but at the same time, you kind of need him to beat Cruz for him to actually be, the legitimate champion, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. He's still got some way to prove, I think. But I think, I don't know whether you guys agree with me on this. I'll get your thoughts in a minute. But I kind of think if the division's not that strong, you need to have a massively long winning streak. Like, you need to be the champ for a lot of fights. Whereas I think you can get more credit in a division which is stronger by winning less fights, if that makes sense. You almost need to make up for the fact that you're beating people who are just not on your level by beating a lot of them. Rather than, I mean, you could argue that's in some ways with John Jones, although, obviously he is fighting good fighters, but he is a level above them. So you could argue that he really needs to beat everyone in that division before anyone says, well, look, you're an absolute legend. But I think personally he's done enough because of the strength of that division to be called the pound for pound, champ or whatever you want to call it, be top of the pound for pound rankings. But I think Barão, to get up there, he would probably have to defend the belt, like you say, Fraser. He'd need to beat Cruz, and he'd probably need to be the champ for another 3-4 years before people started saying, well, look, this guy's, a legend of the sport. At the moment, he's just beating who they put in front of him, but no one's really thinking that he's going to be challenged in any way. So, I don't know. Do you agree with that, Paul? Do you think if you're in a thinner division, you have to hold the belt for longer to get the credit you deserve, sort of thing?
Possibly. I mean, that's what some people say about Anderson Silva and some of his previous fights, like Talas Lides and Patrick Coutet just weren't on the same level, yet they still got title shots before you know, sort of before his legacy really started to build.
You almost get the impression with Burrell that he needs almost like a bad guy. You need kind of like what Anderson Silva had in Chael Sonnen to kind of, you know, put him over to the masses.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'd go along with that. Yeah, there's just not really anyone that's horrendously exciting in that division in terms of name value, in terms of weight. You know, there's some good fights there. You know, there's certainly some exciting fights to be had and have been had, but there's no one who you think, yeah, this is the guy. You know, this is the guy who's going to come up and challenge Burrell and do a, you know, you almost need like a sort of someone he's going to fight close two or three times, you know, three absolute wars, you know. Yeah. And I just can't see that. It doesn't seem to be on the horizon for him at the moment. But
that's,
do you think
Burrell was that guy whenever Cruz was the champion?
Yeah, exactly.
It was like this guy was just cleaning through everyone and just looked, you know, he makes it look effortless, so he does.
It will certainly be intriguing to see when Cruz comes back whether he can be that guy. You know, no, whether so long out.
Yeah, I think 3 years pretty much out, and you know, he hasn't even really been training that much because his knees have just been completely shot, and look how much Henan Burrell came on in those 3 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'll have to see how that one develops, but I think we all pretty much agree he's not the pound for pound best. He's up there. I'd probably have him at 3 or 4 maybe. Fraser, same or?
Yeah, I'll probably put him at number 3, I think.
Yeah, Paul.
Probably 3 if I had to, you know, as it's pound for pound something I don't really like anyway, like, because it's such an arbitrary, you know, nonsensical measurement in a way. It's like, if these guys were the same size, which one would win? Well, they're not.
Yeah, exactly. And it's never going to happen, so we'll never find out.
You know, it's basically just some marketing spiel, you know, so someone can sit and read stats off a card and say, buy this pay-per-view, because we really want you to.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, they're doing a good job at it. They're trying to persuade people with their, you know, lovely slogans by people that work for them, you know, that it's going to be the best fight possibly ever in the history of the world, ever.
Yep.
And
again.
Maybe ever again. Until UFC 174, when Demetrius Johnson takes on Bagautinov, and then that will be the best fight.
And
ever.
He is the pound-for-pound best, I mean.
Yeah.
He's in the smallest division.
Exactly. If he was 10 foot tall, he'd be, you know, he'd beat all these other guys. You know,
if I was 10 feet tall, I would beat them up myself.
Although being 7 foot tall doesn't necessarily help like Stefan Struve or anyone beat everyone in the world. But
at 10 feet, they can't touch my chin.
That's true. Okay, cool. So we'll go on to our submissions section here, which is where we sort of take questions or pose theoretical questions in the world of MMA. So we'll start with number one. What do you guys think of the UFC Embedded series? And I'm going to hand over to Fraser here to just explain a little bit more about UFC Embedded.
Yeah, so it's essentially a cheaper option for UFC to give you the prime time series where, you know, you follow around the fighter and the week before the event. It's worked quite well. But personally speaking, anyway, I think it's worked quite well. It gives you quite a good insight into the fighters' lives leading up to the fight. And it also seems to be a lot less intrusive than the prime time series. I think the fighters have come across as a lot more kind of receptive to this idea rather than have a massive production team following them around for the week. I mean, you can see stuff like Dan Henderson, you know, making jokes about Daniel Cormier eating chicken and that kind of stuff. You know, it's quite entertaining. And although, you know, Dana White seems to have kind of replaced his video blog with himself being in the Embedded show, kind of takes away the point of it a wee bit in my eyes. But yeah, when the series focuses on the fighters, it does work quite well. It also shows things like the episode that aired today. You can see the drastic contrast in weight cuts between Daniel Cormier and Hendo. I mean, Hendo, you know, he's sitting there getting a massage, you know, not caring in the world. And then it cuts to Daniel Cormier with his, you know, he's in the sauna sweating and he's on the treadmill and all this kind of stuff. And Dan Hendo's sitting there, you know, eating chicken, getting massaged. It just kind of shows this massive contrast between weight cuts, which you wouldn't have seen otherwise. So, you know, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I must admit, you're selling it to me there. I'm thinking I'm going to go and watch them all now. Are they're a bit shorter, aren't they? Are they sort of 10, 15 minutes, or is that, am I?
Well, you're going from like, your 20-minute primetime episodes down to, these episodes last from like 3 to 7 minutes,
Oh,
it doesn't
okay. Even
time
shorter,
focused.
yeah. Yeah, like sort of, bite-sized chunks you can just kind of chuck on
Exactly.
and, yeah, absolutely, without having to sort of almost committing to sit down, and sort of thoroughly watch it through. But no, it sounds like a good idea. I do agree with you, though. It doesn't sound, if Dana wants to sort of go on a rant for 7 minutes, rather he do it on something else by the sound of it. But Paul, you've seen one or two, I think. Is that right?
I watched a part of one, and I kind of got distracted whenever it became almost, it looked like a vanity project for Uncle Dana saying how much money he could take away from the Pearl, or the Palms. Pearl's the venue they have there. And it's like, yeah, I just got a phone call from the Palms. I'm not allowed to gamble there anymore, as he sits counting out, $100 bills. So maybe he was earning some post-fight bonus money for the fighters.
So
But,
maybe what we're suggesting is look at the title of the UFC embedded and see whether it's got Dana involved in it, and then maybe
yeah.
just skip that one. Oh, that's
No,
good though.
that's all I've seen of it. Like, so I can't really make too much comments on it. But from what Fraser saying, it's I always enjoyed the primetime shows. It was interesting to see the fighters and all that. But if they're more relaxed than that, instead of having a full-on production crew, following them around 24 hours a day for 3 weeks almost, then it's. It's less intrusive into their lives, and you're going to maybe see more of the real them as well.
Yeah, because I
Yeah.
mean, the one thing I thought about this one was I thought Hendel was going to be maybe a bit boring, kind of a bit more reserved. But yeah,
Yeah.
Hendel is he's a funny guy, like yeah, he comes across as a funny guy anyway.
Yeah, I think anything that sort of helps you emote more with the fighters is only going to be good for the sport, because at the end of the day, that's what they're trying to make you do. They're trying to make you care about these guys, and that's one of the tools that they can use to do that, is to obviously show them backstage. I mean, and when I say care about them, I don't even mean necessarily in a good way. It might be that you watch it and you think this guy's an arsehole, but it means that when he fights next, you think, I want to see that guy get knocked out. And equally, if you see a guy and you think, oh, he's funny, he's decent, you're rooting for him. There's almost nothing worse than a fight where you really don't, unless it's going to be a real barn burner. But there's a lot of fights on the undercard nowadays where you just think, I just really don't care who wins, Whereas if you've got, if they've shown these guys, or if you know of these guys, or sometimes if you've been fortunate enough to maybe meet them or something like that, then it just gives you an extra reason to watch the fights. And I think that's probably what this sort of thing is all about, really. They want to show how what these guys are doing, get you involved in the fight, so that if you see one about Helen Burrell and you think, oh, this guy's a legend, I want to see him win, then you're thinking, I'm going to buy that pay-per-view. Whereas if you think Helen Burrell, not really heard of him, don't really care about him because he doesn't speak English and I don't know anything about him, you're not really going to be shelling out all that money to see him, destroy someone else. So it's all a marketing tool at the end of the day, isn't it? But I think, if it gives us a sort of a behind the scenes access, and I certainly think a sort of a bite-sized format isn't a bad way to go. It sounds like it's going to be a good thing. How long they keep it up might be debatable, because they seem to drop sort of like TV shows and stuff, right, left and centre all the time. I don't know if Paul, I know you've got Fight Pass, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, Fraser, have you got it?
Yeah, I've got it as well,
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah. Well, I notice there's quite a lot of shows on there that if you look at the shows that they've produced, they haven't done one for like 4 months or something, or they've done three recently and never done one before. And I don't know, that confuses me a little bit, because I'm not quite sure which ones I'm supposed to be watching for which things, They don't kind of make it very clear on there. So hopefully they're just going to start doing these shows and just stick with what they're doing, and then it's be a bit easier to follow. You be a bit more aware of what you're supposed to be watching and which is stuff that they don't do anymore, But yeah, I think we all agree it's a good thing, but another thing where we kind of have to see how it develops, I guess, as we go along. So the next question is, the tickets for UFC 175 were released this week. Obviously, this is a subject close to myself and Paul's hearts, because we're going out to Vegas to see it. The prices for UFC 175 for the tickets were $125 plus fees, up to $1,300 for cage side. And I'm not even sure how close that gets you, to be quite honest with you. And actually, the Tough 19 tickets, which the event is the following night, went on sale 2 hours later. And they were priced $50 to $175. So you get a cage side, in theory, for $175. Why the disparity between the two events? So I'll throw that one to you, Paul, seeing as you were on there getting your tickets.
The disparity is basically because you've got two title fights. That's largely it. You know, that's going to be thing. Yeah. You know, you've got, you know, Chris Weidman defending his title and Ronda Rousey defending hers. There's and you've also, it's just more marquee fighters, which is, it's more like a hark back to the older days, whenever you buy your pay per view or your ticket or whatever, and you're paying for the main card, as opposed to, you know, the boxing model, whereas, you know, if Mayweather gets injured, the whole event's scrapped. You know, it's, and more recently, you know, UFC events have been taking that trend, so it's almost, you know, capitalization on the fact that, you know, they've got more high-profile events, and I can see why. You know, it's obviously more expensive than that, but the price range in that was insane. I think pretty much, not just cage side, but all floor seats, apart from maybe at the very back, were $1,300,
yeah.
And as for the 125 ones, I think there was maybe like eight of them. And so
it was like the very back row of like some blocks that are even further back than the rest of the
basically the back row of the furthest rows, because the back row of the upper tier, directly overlooking the octagon, you know, on the long side, I guess, of the arena, they were $400. So the ones I got were the 275 ones, and they're just sort of roughly in the middle of the upper tier, but in pretty much one of the corner blocks. So,
yeah, I ended up with the same actually.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm right in saying, and we'll have to do a bit of fact checking on this. But I was looking at the past few events they've had at Mandalay Bay, pay per views and stuff. I think Rousey McMahon was the last one, and I think this is the most expensive one. I don't know whether it's the most expensive base ticket, but certainly the intervals of where the tickets are. And where you can sit for how much. I mean, $400 to sit on the top tier, halfway back, just because you're at sort of like 6 o'clock looking at the octagon. It's absolutely phenomenal. I think sometimes because it's dollars, people think, oh, well, it, you know, it's not so bad. They almost, I think some people have the mentality it's almost like play money. You know, oh, $10, oh, that's nothing. Well, it's like 6 quid. You know, 7 quid. So $400, I don't know the exact mathematics, but I mean, it's well over 200 quid, you know, and that's a lot of money to sit quite a long way away, you know. I mean, I think it might be like, obviously that's the reason that, you know, it's so much more expensive, is kind of the gravitas of the event, but I think they just know with this one that people want to be there. People want to be there for these fights, even if they have to sit at the very back. They want to say they went to UFC 175. And obviously, they've got a captive audience, because obviously the expo is on the Saturday and Sunday. And can you imagine being that guy, the big UFC fan, queuing up for everything? Oh, are you going to the fight tonight? No. You know, you're not going to be that guy, are you? You want to be the one, you know, saying, you know, the fighters are saying, oh, you know, excited for tonight? No, I'm not going, you know. Unless you're going to sort of try and pester Dana for tickets at the Q&A, which I guarantee will happen.
That's why I'm not going to that.
Yeah.
Or the expo.
Yeah,
I'm going to Vegas. I'm going to try and win back the $275 I spent on a ticket. I'll see you in the casino.
Well, I think that's the thing. They know they've got a captive audience. I mean, the Tough finale, okay, that's on the Sunday night. You may start to get people filtering away from Vegas on the Sunday night. So I think by having the tickets very cheap, they just want to fill the arena, which incidentally, myself and Paul noticed, they're actually not opening some parts of the
the pretty arena. Much the upper tier isn't there.
Yeah,
it's filled, it's apart from the ones
that's
directly
it.
Overlooking the octagon.
Exactly. So I think they just want it full. I think 175, they know someone's going to pay it. If you can't get a $200 ticket, you're going to get a $400 ticket, because you don't want to be that person who says, oh, I missed it. I went to the expo, stayed for 2 days. I didn't go to UFC 175. No fan really truly wants to say that, you know. But I think with the tough, people are a bit less inclined, you know, oh, maybe I'll head home, or it's a bit different for us because obviously we're flying, you know, transatlantic. But, you know, if you're maybe from Vegas, or, you know, you're from nearby, maybe, you know, you just want to head home, you know, I think with the tough tickets, they just want to fill it. I don't even think they care if demand outstrips supply. I think they just want to make sure it's full of people. But it's mainly the thing that gets me is the difference between, say, a cage side seat, although you quite rightly say you probably wouldn't exactly be cage side, but $1,300 for one fight card and $175 for another fight card. I mean, Fraser, I know this, unfortunately, you're not coming with us. You know, if we could get you in our bag, you know, we would, if you wouldn't get frozen in the cargo hold, but, you know. Exactly. But I mean, just even hearing those numbers, that's a frightening, disparity, isn't it? Really.
I mean, it's almost like a money grab. You know, they know that people will pay it, so they may as well just jack them up as much as possible. It's the same kind. I mean, I don't know if they're increasing the pay-per-view price for this card, but remember what they did at UFC 168. You know, they put up the price for the biggest card of the year because they know people will pay it to watch it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's... trouble is, that kind of makes you a little bit... it kind of puts you in a bit of an attitude where you kind of realise that the UFC are just ripping you off in some... You know, I mean, okay, fair enough, there's a title fight, but when you know that as soon as there's a good fight, they just say, oh, well, whatever we were charging before, just jack it up, it kind of seems like they don't really care about the fans, you know. It shouldn't really be. I can understand the difference between a pay-per-view card and a tough card. You know, it's a totally different thing. But to say, well, this card's got two title fights on, so we're going to charge you, the minimum ticket is $125. This fight card's got one title fight on it, so we're going to charge you $75. It just seems like they're trying to just juice you for whatever you've got. You know, just because they know it's going to be, you know, that they can do it, they just carry on. So... I mean, you know, it's a little bit frustrating. I mean, you know, we're gonna be there, but it's a little bit sad that that's how they work, you know. Oh, well, this is a good fight, so let's just take them for whatever we can get, you know. Oh, this isn't a boring fight, so it's almost an acknowledgement as well. Yeah, this card's not that great. Just charge them $50, you know. This card, pretty good. High as you like, you know. It's a bit of a sad state of affairs, but you know, I'm sure we'll enjoy it, you know. But yeah, cool. So we'll go to our last question in this section, and that is, will you be buying the new UFC game? And I'll hand that over to Fraser.
Well, the main reason why I won't be buying the new UFC game is because I don't have a PlayStation 4. I mean, even if I did, I probably wouldn't. You know, they're the kind of games that you play for, you know, an hour or two, and then you just get bored, and it just sits there collecting dust for the rest of the thing, you know. I mean, it's unless they can, you know, have like a truly next generation mode in the game that keeps you involved with it for a long period of time, then I mean, I think they've tried to do that with them. Like, I think you have to go through the Ultimate Fighter before you get into your UFC career now. But you know, it's the kind of thing that just it doesn't hold my attention, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, but Paul, do you think that's because it's hard to translate the game, translate the sport into the game, should I say, or?
Pretty much. I mean, with striking, it's, you know, they did quite a good job in the previous one, although it was a different developer. It's now under EA Sports, and the last time they tried to make a mixed martial arts game, it was horrific, because they had their own one, just EA Sports MMA with Fedor on the cover, and
it was
pretty grim. But as a jiu-jitsu practitioner, just the real lack of any detail in the ground game and that is just upsetting, annoying, you know.
Yeah.
Press a button, it picks a random submission for you. It's like, oh, I'd like to be able to have some more depth in it with, you know, what it can do. So I'd like to try and sort of, you know, Yeah.
It seems like with every game they've brought out, probably since the first one or two, they all say new redesigned submission system. And it's always different, but equally as bad. They still haven't hit a nail on the head. I think in the last one, correct me if I'm wrong, it was like a bar that was kind of ran round the octagon, and you had a bar, and you had to make the bars overlap to get the submission.
Yeah, I think that was it.
And it was like, but it just totally, it kind of stopped you. You were supposed to be doing this submission, but really, you were just watching this bar go round. It kind of took it, it was almost like it wasn't that game for a minute. It was a totally different game, and then it chucked you back into the normal game. You know, it sort of jarred with how it should be a sort of a fluid game, as it were. You know, but I still don't think they've really got the... I think they'd have to do something. I mean, obviously, I'm speaking from a point of view. I don't have a PlayStation 4 either, so I won't be buying it. Yeah. Lucky old you. If you don't want it anymore, you know, just send it over. So, you know, where... I'll give you a stamped address envelope and everything. But to be honest with you, I think I probably would buy it because I'm a bit of a whore like that. Every year I say, I won't buy FIFA. No, I'm not going to buy it. About a week before, I go, oh, sod it, I'll just buy it. I'll just get it. You know, and I think that's probably what I will end up doing with, you know, even if I buy it and then don't enjoy it, as I probably know I won't. I'm just a bit like that with things like this, you know. I don't know. There's a trailer online. I guess I don't know if you guys have seen it or sort of seen a part of it, but it's the first round. I think of is it Aldo and Pettis?
Yeah, correct. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah,
and lightweight.
A lightweight. Yeah. So
hopefully,
yeah.
A sign of things to come.
It could be maybe. EA,
I would like to see Aldo move up.
They know something that we don't. That's what it is, maybe. But one thing I always notice, and I don't know whether you guys notice this, but I always think the fighters move funny. They move funny. They're never on their toes. They're always flat-footed. And I don't know whether this is something that they might change or they might have different fighter stances or something, but they always kind of step everywhere. They step everywhere. They never sort of on their toes moving side to side. It's always a step to the side or a step. And I just think it's quite jarring if you watch it. If you watch a real fight and then you watch the game, it just doesn't... That kind of element of it doesn't really translate the movement of just being on your feet. You know, I don't know whether that's something maybe you guys could have a look at, you know, in the future and you know, feedback to me on it. But I just there's just some things that just don't quite look right. I don't really know how they get round that and still make it an entertaining game. I know, Fraser, you said they're gonna have this Ultimate Fighter mode in there where you have to go through that, I think, to get into the UFC. And I think that's not a bad shout. I hope they don't sort of go down the sort of WWE route of, like, you know, someone asks you a question. Do you say, you know, go and get stuffed? Or do you say, yeah, let's go and practice wrestling? You know, I hope they don't go down that kind of route, you know, because that kind of takes it out of what you're supposed to be doing. But equally, they do need to pep it up somehow. Because otherwise it's just fight, 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 you know. And then you do these sort of training drills in between, but they quickly become quite boring and arbitrary, you know, lifting a tire and flipping it over. You do it once or twice and you just think, I don't ever really want to do that ever again. But if you don't, you don't get strong with your player, you know. So, I don't know, they need to do something. I think I'll be intrigued to give it a play. I think it's one of those ones, like you say, Fraser, where there's a finite amount of time you're going to play it. I can't see that you're going to play it all year and then another one comes out. It's going to be a month or two, maybe every now and again you think, oh yeah, stick it on for a laugh, or maybe you watch a UFC and you think, oh yeah, I'll sort of recreate it or whatever, you know, have a quick go on there. But yeah, it's difficult. I think I'll be interested to see, you know, with the UFC taking over the license, you know, how it improves. But yeah, so we've got... Paul, did you say no? You're not going to buy it.
No.
So I'm the only one going to buy it.
If there is a demo, I will download it. But yes. Demos are pretty few and far between.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and of course they don't always represent the content of the final game. Just bear that in mind. So we've got
two notes. The most value I ever had from a UFC game was creating a character that looked like my old boss and kicking him in the head.
Oh, nice! That's intriguing. Normally people create characters of themselves and then pretend that they're a UFC fighter, but yeah, that's a different...
No, I created me, then I created
then you created him and kicked him in the
yep.
head.
Yep.
Yeah. That could actually provide some longevity to the game. Just create people you don't like.
Who has pissed me off today?
Yeah, damn it, I'm going on Creator Fighter. Yes. Where's the moustaches? Where are the moustaches? How thick shall I have it? Yeah, okay. Bit of overkill on there sometimes, but no, that's cool. Well, that was our last question, so I guess we should wrap things up. I would be remiss in not saying that this week's Gareth A. Davies biscuit of the week is the Orange Club. So if anyone wants to know more about Gareth A. Davies biscuit of the week, then obviously you can hit us up on Twitter. That's at BritsPiecesMMA. There's no and, just to clarify. Couldn't get it all in the address, that was why. No other reason than that. Obviously, check out the website, www.britsandpiecesmma.co.uk. And I'll say thank you to my two lovely guests, Mr. Paul Anderson.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Fraser Ryan.
It's been a pleasure.
Lovely. Well, I'll say sayonara, and we shall hopefully speak to you guys in a week or two. Thank you and good night.